Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go to Tuesday. Cofield and Company. Adam Hill is in as the company. Damon is here as well. Busy day. We got crazy stuff to recap last night in the NBA. Disappointing endings for a couple of fan bases and exhilaration on the other side. A very good start, I thought, for VGK. But Adam Hill will lay out all the negatives of the Game 1 victory. And Curtis Terry will be in later this hour, and we'll tell you a little later what's happening. As the show moves along, Curtis, of course, great basketball mind. His brother played in the NBA. He played at UNLV. He played internationally. One of the voices of the Rebels. I cannot believe you're here. Cannot believe you can devote a Tuesday draft week to do any radio. Aren't you slamming and jamming?
Yeah, I mean, not to go too inside, but for some logistical reasons, I had to turn a mock draft in early this year.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll see at the expense of, it's been pretty accurate the last couple of years. Maybe at the expense of that.
Come on, you hear it?
We'll see.
Is his accuracy screwed over?
I already would have changed a few things on the draft. So
really,
yeah, we'll see. But I mean, it's done. I'm. My hands are washed. I don't think I've slept in like 7 days. But like now, I'm like, all right, I'm actually gonna go home. Probably. I usually watch Draft Day the night before the draft. It's like my tradition.
It's a great movie, an all-time classic.
I might actually go home.
You love it.
Just curl up on the couch, throw it on tonight. Actually get a nice sleep in. Like, this is a very different year. Very different year preparing for the draft.
Don't you have so many other TV shows to catch up on?
That's tradition.
I was kind of embarrassed for you the other day. You got a text from some of our friends in Denver, and they were like, what do you like better, Beef or The Bear? And Adam just kind of limps into the conversation a few minutes later. He's like, I haven't seen either one of them.
I don't watch TV.
And they're like, what do you watch?
Stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, that's what I do. I went back and watched Fish's episode last night just because. The Christmas episode of The Bear? It's so good.
That's the one in Chicago with like a chef? Or like a cook?
Yes.
Like some cooks?
Yeah.
Yes. Steve was telling me a story yesterday and it inspired me.
Right? It was exactly like it. I might have to tell that story a couple weeks from now. I hit a lot of restaurants and bars this weekend. We had people in town and all we did was stay downtown in the Arts District. And we went to a restaurant. We were sitting right near.
Did you stay in the Arts District?
We didn't stay anywhere. We just drove back and forth each day.
Gotcha.
But we were entertaining friends. That's where they wanted to hang out. And we had an experience where they had, the kitchen was open. So you could kind of see the food coming out and the expedite and, hands. Yeah, chef. And there was an explosion at one point. And I was like, that's kind of cool. But if there were like kids sitting right here, you're dropping F-bombs. So there's a lot to the story. But I'm glad that you got into The Bear again, and that Christmas episode is one of the greatest episodes in television history. A lot of people, when they watch that, they're like, that felt like my family at times.
Did you end up at the pirate bar at all? There's like a new pirate bar downtown. It's
possibly.
It's cool. Like the last three times I've been down in the Arts District, people are like, hey, we're at the pirate bar. I'm like, all right. You end up there.
We have more and more pirate-themed bars here.
But it's so dark. Like as you walk outside. No, Damon, that's not what I meant. As you walk outside, he gave me a look.
Damn.
What's
wrong with you, Adam?
He gave me a look. Did you not give me a look?
It wasn't the look that you're implying. Okay. I just thought, but keep it moving.
No, you.
What does that say about you?
Your eyes do not adjust. You gave me the look. Your eyes do not adjust quickly. So you see if it's the daytime and you go in there and it's super dark in there, you walk outside and everybody's like, I can't see any. It's crazy.
I will not confirm or deny if I was there.
You
were. But it wasn't that dark.
Okay.
As compared to the other joints we went to, there's a place that's very dark.
Okay.
And then there's another place that I don't like going to, but others do. There you go.
Wow. I like it.
Very cryptic. Very cryptic.
I think I would. I wish I could make guesses because I feel like I know that place.
So last night I got a little backed up with time, and so I was watching VGK and Lakers Nuggets. Did not look at the internets, so I watched Lakers Nuggets first. And as I'm watching, and you could see the lead being whittled down, I'm like, these guys, the freaking Denver Nuggets. I don't know who you're comparing to. Like, there are just eras and teams when you're like, they're going to win. It's just going to happen. This is the new enemy of LeBron. He's had all these different enemies along the way. Obviously, GSW is probably as significant as any, where you just knew he ain't going to win. And that was, if you're a Laker fan, and I'm kind of rooting for the Lakers because I like LeBron, but, I mean, everything that could go wrong from the middle of the third quarter through the end of the game was just a disaster. I mean, you finish the game, I cannot stand D'Angelo Russell. But even he had some big shots, and he had a lot of threes early. AD goes for 32, LeBron goes for 28, and there's just this mystique around Jokic, as goofy as he looks. When he needs to score, he's going to score. When he needs to make the right pass, it's going to happen. When they need to get a big rebound, they get it. When they need a missed free throw, like LeBron down the stretch, or a missed three, or if they need AD to go 14 of 15 and then start taking jumpers, that happens too. It's just they're not there yet because they're not a dynasty. But they're one of those teams, as you're watching, you're like, they're not going to lose no matter what you do to them. There's no friggin' stake. Put it in their heart. Didn't happen.
Well, it's also a very, very bad matchup for the Lakers.
Yeah, it is. You know why it's a bad matchup?
Yeah.
Because the offseason sucked and they didn't build the roster. Everyone else in the league, one, you have to have three-point shooters with LeBron, but everyone else in the league is like, all right, right now the team to beat plays big boy basketball. We got to have some layers of bigs. And the Lakers did nothing in the offseason.
Right, but they also should have tried to avoid playing them.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
And that's why the regular season matters, and that's why the flip the switch thing when you've got basically two players and a supporting cast does not work. We'll get to it later. 4 o'clock hour. I don't want to get too worked up.
When you said
so
D'Angelo,
freaking frustrating.
You talked about D'Angelo. Did you like D'Angelo Russell postgame?
I don't care. He's a child. He's dopey. What did he do postgame? I saw that he tweeted something out about the officials.
Well, then he just left. He's left the presser.
They all, I mean, AD throwing down his microphone. It's like, show the passion in the third and fourth quarter. So it's so stupid. So frustrating. All right, well, great win by VGK. Really good win, I think. But Adam will usually come over the top to my positives with a bunch of negatives, so give us the negatives first. They're 1-0 in the series, and they held off. I thought they played, you know, pretty well, limited opportunities. Middle of the third all the way through the fourth, and you know, they gave up one. It was a sloppy goal, but beyond that, they played well.
There's
gave
only,
up one, you know,
there's
make
only,
it 4-3.
Yeah. I mean, you said there was going to be negatives. They're of the NFL, or excuse me, the NHL and NBA postseason, one team has won on the road in the game one. It's the Golden Knights.
The Evil Empire. The Nuggets of the NHL.
Of whatever.
You like how we're screaming and yelling about the Nuggets? Day, the Nuggets! We have the Knights. Okay.
Whatever nitpicking you want to do about the game yesterday, there was, believe me, there's plenty of things you could say. Well, this wasn't great, this wasn't good. They won. Mm-hmm. Postseason, that's really what it is. They won, especially on the road. Like, you obviously have to take care of your home, but especially when you don't have home ice, like the Knights don't in this series, now they do. You've got to win on the road. You got to find a way to win. And they did. And that was good. And if you're, again, if you, like, usually you're right. I will find ways to break it down. Logan Thompson gave up a horrific goal. Horrific. Awful. Can't happen.
That
unacceptable.
That shook all of us here in Vegas. We're like, uh-oh. This could be the beginning of some big problems.
Yeah, but didn't let it turn into two. Which he has done in the past.
Do we grade what Logan Thompson did throughout the game, or is it more important to grade, as you always point out, that there's, you know, two stories when it comes to not letting shots on goal and good opportunities? They blanketed the goal area. I don't think Wischusen stated it correctly. I don't know what I'm supposed to state about it, but he was just talking about almost like a diamond formation. Pavelski was standing there trying to get some work done, and they were just all over him. Help! How about this? Mark Stone comes back. Can I get Stone's first goal?
Looking out high again. Hanifin shoots, and it goes in! Deflected in front, and Vegas takes the lead. Mark Stone parked between the circles, got a piece of the wrist shot from out high. Welcome back, Mark Stone.
Better stated, their first goal by Mark Stone, and then McNabb got to push it out to 4-2 in the second. Fire this one.
Offensive zone faceoff win. Eichel gets it on the right. Rink wide left. McNabb shoots and scores. Nice. A drive from high on the left side gets through Ottinger. And the Knights have a 4-2 lead.
And then I'm busting through these highlights because I wanted to see, I didn't get to hear this one yet. At the end of the game, there was a couple of last second rushes. Let's see what we get from Dan Duva here.
6 seconds to go on the left side. Picked up by Petrangelo. Comes to the near side wall. Johnston keeps it alive. Hits feeds right just by Ben Stick, and the clock runs out. Vegas holds on. 4-3 Knights. They take game one. And the first Stanley Cup playoff start for Logan Thompson is a victory.
There you go. I wanted to see if he had mentioned it. I'm sure they did when they watched the replay. Stone was right there to dump down and block the shot from 1,000 miles away. But yeah, that was also kind of the story of the game. They blocked a lot of shots. I didn't see the final numbers, but that was a good defensive game.
That's usually, that's what they want to do. They want to make sure shots don't get to the net. They want to block them before they get there. They want to limit opportunities in front. They want to limit rebounds, all those things. It's what teams say they want to do, but the Knights actually do, when they're playing their best, they actually do a pretty good job of actually doing those things, and they did them yesterday. And a lot of those guys had been on the ice, including Stone, for a long time at the end because they just kept icing the puck. It was like, just get it out of here. We'll deal with being tired later.
Loosely trying to get the empty net.
Yeah, well, kind of. And Stone missed pretty badly on one that he tried to get from his own end, but they were just sending it down, saying, you know what, we'll deal with the fatigue, because you do have to stay out there on the ice. You can't change after an icing. And so they are kind of exhausted out there, and you can tell, but hey, we'd rather be exhausted than, have to deal with the puck in our zone.
NHL playoff discussions on Cofield & Company are sponsored by Findlay Acura in the Valley Auto Mall. We'll get back to VGK in the 5 o'clock hour, but up next, we got the Raiders, the NFL draft coming up here in just about 2 days. And Tom Telesco sat down with Adam Hill and others on Monday, so we'll go through what TT said.
Now back to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Draft coming up in a couple of days. Adam, where are you going to be for the draft? At Raiders headquarters?
Most likely, yes.
Is there still a possibility that you may jet out of town if there was a Raiders story that you had to cover that was super important?
Yes.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Do you believe that anything is going to develop in the next – I mean, that would have to be kind of workable. It has to happen tonight or tomorrow. I guess late on Wednesday. Do you think anyone makes a move to get into the top five who needs a quarterback?
I think we might. I mean,
Broncos, Raiders, Vikings, maybe a surprise, maybe the Giants.
Famous last words, because I'm sure I'll say this now and then before the end of the show we'll announce it did. But the issue is, from what it sounds like, the Patriots are more than willing to trade three.
I told everybody.
But nobody wants Drake May.
Nobody wants Drake May.
Not in that way that you're going to trade up to that spot. So basically the Patriots are out there like, who wants the third pick? And everybody's like, yeah, what about that second pick? Anybody that second pick available from the Commanders? And who are they taking? We need to know who the Commanders are taking before we move.
Why don't you carry for about 5 minutes? Let me bet this over Drake May prop.
Yeah. So that's what it seems like, where teams are just constantly calling the Commanders asking to move up to number two, and the Commanders are saying no, including as it was reported today, and I have no reason to not believe it, that the Raiders call the Commanders as early as or as late as today. So give us that second pick. And then the Patriots, I'm sure, followed up by calling the Raiders like, hey, what about three? You want three? Does three interest you? What about three? We'll sell it at a discount, and no takers. So that's how it appears at this point. Not that nobody wants Drake May, but nobody's willing to trade a ransom for the third pick like they are the second pick.
Well, that's what it sounds like. The whole time you were talking, I was thinking, I feel bad for Drake May. Sounds like his stock is plummeting.
Well, plummeting to three.
Yeah, wow. this guy's taking it on the chin.
Real poor guy is going to be picked third, it seems like. And here's the other thing. Commanders could be playing coy. Maybe it's the Commanders that are taking Drake May. And then the third pick all of a sudden becomes the Commanders make that pick on Thursday night, and the Patriots can't stop. Like, the Patriots, I hope they have like seven, eight phone lines, so it's not like busy. As teams are like your phone lines over there where multiple people can call in. You don't want a busy signal. Well, you're trying to shop this third pick when you only have 10 minutes to do it. I guess, you know, is it 15 or 10 first round? I think it's 15. It used to be 15. Now it's maybe 10. 10-7-5, is that how it goes for as the rounds go down? But, yeah, you only have a few minutes if Drake May is the pick at number two to then say, all right, now Jaden Daniels is available at three. Let's make this pick. So there's a lot of moving pieces.
Monday, you guys sat down with Tom Telesco, the GM of the Raiders. Seemed like a long conversation. Was he pretty open?
No, he wasn't open.
No, not at all.
We didn't expect him to be. I mean, that's the book on Tom Telesco, is that he's incredibly friendly, more than willing to talk off the record, and then as soon as the mics come on and the red light comes on, nothing.
News flash. GM says he's open to trading up, moving back, picking a spot. Like, everybody always says the same thing. So, we have a plan right now. To go up if we have to and be aggressive with it. We've got a plan if we stick and pick, obviously. And we got a plan to go back if it's within a certain range. It's been normal this year, as like other years. Like, there's been conversations with other teams, but it's probably more general than specific. It really wouldn't get more specific to usually like later in the process, Tuesday, Wednesday, even Thursday, even sometimes when you're on the clock. So, but it's been about the same amount of work that goes into that.
Yikes. DeMond, explode over that.
Fascinating. If you just
can't believe what he said.
He's taking it down to the last minute, Steve. He doesn't know what he's going to do until he's basically on the clock, is what it sounds like. Oh, man.
Adam, is he going to be unprepared for the draft? That didn't. We're kidding.
He's keeping his cards close to the vest.
He also talked about drafting for the future and maybe the rookie year is not the most important part of the pick.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always a short-term look, long-term look to it. And I think the thing we have to remember is we're drafting these players for a minimum of 4 to 5 years. We're drafting them for the future, and that's what we're hoping to get out of them. It's not so much where they fit in initially as a rookie their first year. History shows, you know, probably less than a third of rookies, maybe even like 30% of rookies, actually play a high number, a significant amount of snaps their rookie years or fill a need. So that's reality. So whatever needs we may have today or whatever perceived needs those are, these players we're drafting, we're looking down the road, you know, minimum, I say, 4 to 5 years moving. So, but whenever we talk about players, we do talk about, okay, what role would they have right away? What role would they have in the future? And kind of go off that.
Very optimistic about 4 or 5 years based on the last 5 years of drafting.
Sure. But you do
get how many draft classes from in the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years, the entire class is almost cleared out and not playing. Might not even be playing in the NFL, but not playing with the Raiders. So, please, Raiders fans would love to have guys you draft and still be concerned about them and maybe signing them long-term after 4 and 5 years. That'd be wonderful.
I didn't like that answer. I want the guys to stay longer. I need some foundation pieces on this team.
Well, you only get 4 years for a rookie contract, 5 if it's a first-round pick. I think that's what he means.
Keep them longer. Well, the team just lost Josh Jacobs.
Right. He's not saying they won't.
We can't keep letting first-round picks walk.
Well, most of their first-round picks haven't lasted 4.
He's a freaking rousing success.
Yeah, if you can get 5 years out of your first-round picks, you're thrilled.
Unfortunately, they picked a guy at the position that almost no one values in terms of a long-term deal.
Yeah. Tom Telesco, it's not his job to come out and say who he's picking, obviously. He's not going to do that. He's a very professional approach to all this, so I've no doubt he's going to have the draft. He knows he has a plan in place. He knows what he wants to do, but he's not going to tell us.
I mean, I heard guard in there.
You did?
From how he discussed. No, not really, no. Heard nothing. We can guess at it, and I'm very curious to pop open your mock draft in the 5 o'clock hour. You did point out that he talked about drafting for, you know, when you get to a certain spot in the draft, I don't think you're there when you're 13, but you know, when you're a little further down on the draft, a lot of times it's like, oh, this person's available. We're kind of loaded there, but hey, it's the best guy on my board. And Telesco gave a good example of that.
The story I've told here is, I guess it'd be my first year with the Chargers. Our roster needed a lot of work, but I felt like our receiver group was the strongest group on the football team. So we're in the draft, we're in the third round, and Keenan Allen's card is just staring at us, just begging us to take him. And we decide, all right, we'll take him, but more than likely, he'll probably redshirt the year. We don't really have a spot for him. He may even be inactive every week. And then we get into May OTAs and one receiver gets hurt. We get into training camp. Another receiver really didn't perform the way we thought he would. And then in September, another receiver got hurt. Keenan jumps in the game in September and he's rookie of the year that year. So like I said, your needs change quickly and unpredictably. So it's hard to go into a draft just thinking how we're going to line up this opening day. We have to take a little bit more long-range approach to it, like I was telling Hondo, and look, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road rather than just how they fit today.
76th pick in the draft. 71 catches, 1048, 8 touchdowns? Okay.
Yeah.
And that was a good one.
I will say that I was prepared for that story because I talked to some Chargers folks and they said, he's going to tell you the Keenan Allen story because he knows that you'll eat it up. Like, not me. Like, you guys all just eat it up and you'll be like, oh, he really opened up and said something. And, like, he tells the story all the time. It's an old story. That's, like, kind of his way of, hey, here's something you can write about.
Out top to DiVincenzo. His shot won't go. Hartenstein, the rebound. Hartenstein gets it out to Ananobi. DiVincenzo, a three. Bang! Bang! Knicks take a one-point lead with 13 seconds remaining.
Now back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota studio.
Go New York, go New York, go! Go New York, go New York, go!
Say go New York, go New York. DeMond is not a Knicks fan, but I think the combination of Breen, the passion, being an area guy, and the rare double bang, that was kind of special for you.
It was special for me, but it also made me think, if they make the finals, they got to take him off the national broadcast.
So, oh, you think he lacks objectivity?
Yes.
Well, he hasn't been tested very much, at least for the last 20 years or so.
But that call, Dante DiVincenzo deserves a double bang?
You're right. It is over the top because it's the Knicks. I mean, it was a cool moment.
That's my point.
It was a cool moment. The place went crazy. I mean, it's not the arena or as loud as Ball Arena. It's not. Last night it was good, but the Nuggets Arena was louder, and there's more vitriol and hate, especially with LeBron there. But that was a great call, and those were crazy moments down the stretch. We're going to examine what was happening with the Sixers. I'll ask one quick question here, because as we're building this part of the show every day to address my quibbles and queries, Cofield's quibble queries, and Adam will have plenty along the way. I haven't followed the fan attitude around Dante DiVincenzo, who I actually believe is more legitimately Italian than one Tommy Cutlets.
But does he have an agent that wears like a mob suit?
Maybe. There was a college football, check that, college basketball announcer who had, I don't think it makes any sense, but did dub DiVincenzo when he was at Villanova the Big Ragu. I don't know if there's a connection to Carmine or not. I don't know. You know who Carmine is, right? Oh, you don't? Okay. Laverne and Shirley. Uh-uh. Remember the Big Ragu?
Okay.
Hey, what?
Okay. And who are Laverne and Shirley?
You know who Laverne and Shirley are.
I've heard of them. They were worked at the beer factory.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do the song.
Didn't it? Yeah, that was the theme song.
I would assume DiVincenzo.
Did you see the Monica McNutt version of the play-by-play, though?
I didn't. You know what? I didn't even know she was on the broadcast, and then I was watching a little bit of Greeny this morning, and she was on there styling and profiling and towering over everyone, very intimidating. And I'd learned that she's actually on the next broadcast.
Well, I was wondering, because I think it's radio.
Yeah.
And it was so intense, and it was a great call by the play-by-play guy. She just kind of was watching and waiting for her time to go, which I think you would enjoy. She definitely waited. And then waited for her time.
We got to work on this.
Waited for her time, and then went.
Beautiful.
But she did do the, like, it was so intense, and they were both so hanging on the edge of their seat that she, like, grabbed onto his arms and was like, oh, but like, what is, like, it was like such an intense moment that she was like holding on for dear life watching it. And I was just thinking, I feel like that's what you do as a color guy, too.
I get so excited.
Grab it onto the play by play guy.
I get so excited.
Can you believe this?
UNLV Akron game that we called on TV with Matt and Everett. I mean, I just was grabbing them the whole time.
Yeah, the whole time.
It was so dramatic because they almost came back and won.
Yeah, it's good. I like that.
Not quite.
DiVincenzo, didn't he set the record for most threes in a season for the Knicks this year?
Did he?
Okay, research crew, look up.
I have no idea.
Vast production crew, please get the cut with McNutt on it.
Or maybe it was, I don't know. How many did he hit yesterday? Was it the most in a game? I don't know. So it was,
you can't just keep making up stats.
You just see stuff.
I don't watch the NBA. I don't know until the playoffs start.
Sorry, I didn't have this on the rundown for you.
I don't know.
The DiVincenzo. And you know what? I might, who knows? I might be completely wrong. Maybe he's not a real Italian. You should know where he's from.
But you also.
You do know that, right? He is very much kind of connected to your basketball roots.
Sure.
Do you?
Yeah, Delaware guy.
Okay, good. And it's Newark.
Newark, Delaware, yes.
Newark.
Well, no, you threw me off just already because you were talking about how loud the arena was.
Yeah.
It, I mean, you're not going to love this, but there was a whole thing on McAfee today, and they were just going nuts about, is Winnipeg the greatest arena that's ever existed?
Like, what?
Those fans.
Okay, this.
Those fans are wild.
This is a legit quibble. Thank you for bringing this up, and it's from out of nowhere. This is perfect for this portion of the show.
Love
Shut
it.
Up.
Yes.
You're making it up.
I'm not.
Is there someone Canadian
as
on
I was watching
this
it,
stupid table?
There
of terror?
Was one, but he wasn't the one talking about it. They were PK Subban was on. They were talking to him about it.
Winnipeg.
Yeah. They were like, this arena.
Why? Because they all
wear
white.
Your time here.
Yeah, for PK Subban, it's intimidating.
I came back.
He looks
from,
up and he's like, my God, where am I?
I came back from Winnipeg and I was like, that is the greatest arena I've ever been in for a sporting event. That is wild in that place.
It what sucks. Do they do there?
It's Steve's been
They don't
back.
Do anything.
Nothing. They watch the game and they react to
there's
it.
No music. There's no graphics. There's
do,
no giveaways.
There's no giveaways.
There's no skating women with the shovel.
There's
none
no
of that.
Nonsense on the ice. You're there to watch a hockey game.
And it's dead silent and they all
It's not dead silent. And, they are and going
they,
wild.
And they do a whiteout all the time.
Is this the place where when they sing the Steve's. National anthem though?
They say True North?
I don't know. I was trying to be a part of it. But
it's
it doesn't
True North.
We're not we're just there to watch a game. That seems like some real elitism. We just watch the game here.
Yes. And they're
perfect.
Passionate
That's
and
him.
Loud.
Is he not,
and
is he not
into
the elite
it.
Fan?
We're not not cranking a siren over here.
Yeah.
They're we don't
there
need
for,
that.
They're
we
there
love
for
hockey.
They're there because they love hockey and they want to watch a hockey game.
They have no life.
It is
experience nothing else.
Loud as heck in that place. It is wild.
Isn't figure skating the number two sport?
Like curling?
Or is it curling?
Curling, I think.
The Canada? Bell Center, huh?
The peg.
See, soccer's getting big there, too.
You should have saw how loud they got for Sami Zayn last week.
Actually, I did. And then that jerk, Chad Gable,
what
in
are you
front
doing?
Of his family.
Is
in front of his family.
What is going on here? Yeah.
Sami Zayn, he defended his Intercontinental Championship
I don't mean
in
this
the
part.
Bell Center.
I didn't need the story. I just mean him. There's something going on with him.
No, there's not.
That's why he can't watch any TV. He's watching real TV. He's watching real cinema. The WWE.
Can't have a conversation
I actually
about
didn't.
Any popular show, but as soon as I you freaking, who was it? Sami Zayn.
Sami Zayn.
Gable what?
Chad Gable. He's an Olympic medalist, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I was, yes, it pops up on my YouTube algorithm, and I'm like, oh, what happened here? Like, Sami Zayn gets the hell beat out of him.
Well, it's
like,
on Peacock, isn't it? This.
It is, but they pop up one
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, the WWE YouTube does a great job of, you know, yeah. editing down the show in the clips.
Yeah, I didn't get that clip on
So it's
TikTok,
all over YouTube.
Sorry.
It's just all, my algorithm just gets loaded. I'm like, all right, I guess I'll watch this.
And that's all you watch.
Well, I watch anything that pops on my algorithm. I do what YouTube tells me to do now.
You know what, Steve? I'm
That's
pulling
my
a 180. Because let me tell you about this entrance. Sami Zayn, he's outside, and it's, what are you doing outside? He's like, this is the first wrestling show I ever came to was here in the Bell Center, and I'm going to come in for this match the same way I walked in, through the front door. He walks through the front door, comes through concessions, comes down through the crowd. He grabs a Canadian flag from a fan, and that place was raucous.
When he defended his title, then Chad Gable snapped.
So if it's anything like that, watching a hockey
and
match
then,
the way they watch that wrestling
And then
match.
He just started lecturing his Alpha Academy pupils. It was sad.
He's locked in. I haven't even watched that segment yet.
It's on my algorithm, I'm telling you.
NBA, college basketball, Curtis Terry up next.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's continue on the NBA. I can't do the wrestling thing, especially now that I know there's ulterior motives. You got to stop. You got to stop with that.
I also had my Canadian cities mixed up. I was thinking of Montreal. We were talking about Winnipeg the whole time.
I know. I heard
don't know,
Bell
I don't,
Center, and I was like, I don't know.
I don't know geography.
It's all right. It was a good conversation. I didn't know what you were talking about, but you know, I often do that to you guys. Curtis Terry is up to talk some NBA, talk a little UNLV recruiting. Curtis, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How's it going, fellas?
A little too much wrestling talk, but that's okay. let's get back to the Lakers. My God, I was so fired up in the middle of the third quarter, but in the back of my head, I'm like, they're going to blow this, aren't they? And then I thought the offensive attack for the better part of the middle of the third quarter, early fourth. I just didn't get what the Lakers were doing.
Me neither. I mean, and DeMond, last week did we not tell Steve not to put his money on the Lakers?
Yeah. Sure did.
I mean, and hopefully you took that advice. You heeded that advice.
Well, but, here's the thing, CT, before game two, the series number had the Lakers, they're down 1-0. It had them at 6-1 to come back and win the series. Like, you have to take that. You're in a golden position. You're up 20-plus in the third, and then no win.
Yeah, the only thing I had with that is I thought the same thing last night as the game was going along. Obviously, the Lakers were playing well, but they started the game two just like they started game one. They were hitting shots. Even D'Angelo Russell was knocking down shots early. I mean, he had, what, 5 threes very early in the game. But something about the way it was happening just didn't make me feel comfortable. Even when they hit that 20-point mark and it was 68-48 early in the third quarter, I just felt like if the Nuggets could cut this lead and continue to play good basketball, the Lakers will eventually give it up. And nonetheless, that's what happened. I think the Lakers just got a little too dependent on LeBron James having the ball in his hands. And as great as LeBron is, and I haven't been the biggest LeBron fan over time, and that's well noted, but he just has to carry the load so much, and they didn't get the ball to Anthony Davis. And I think that ultimately hurt them because eventually the Nuggets were going to get it going. And Jamal Murray, as poorly as he shot, I mean, for the first three quarters of the game, he turned it on in the fourth quarter. And Jokic showed why he is so good. And just Anthony Davis, who proclaimed to be the best player of the year, he couldn't stop him and definitely couldn't stop Jamal Murray on that last play. And I think the Nuggets now, I think they've got that confidence. They've got the Lakers' number. And I think it's just a matter of two more games, and this thing's probably going to be over.
Curtis, this might be an impossible question to answer, but there was about a three-possession stretch where Jokic was just playing dad ball with Anthony Davis, so like basically just giving them, you can't do nothing with me treatment. What can a team do to combat that, where he's just backing you down as soon as he gets the ball from the three-point line?
There's not much you can do, DeMond. I mean, with Jokic, I mean, he's so skilled, and everybody you hear on TV and talking about his game, I mean, he does it all. And he's an old-school player. He's a new-school player. He can play physical. He can play finesse. He can knock down shots. I mean, a lot of the times he's getting the ball out of the basket in transition and pushing and starting to break for these guys. And it gets to the point where Anthony Davis was late in that game. He was in foul trouble. So the most you could do is just try to stay in his way. And I think that one play was symbolic of who Nikola Jokic is he gets the ball, goes middle, and he shot fakes, reverse pivots, and then reverse pivots again and spins all the way through to the basket. I mean, there's just so many ball fakes and foot fakes and just great footwork that he has on display. And then if you do double them, you kick it out. And then they've got guys that are role players that are knocking down shots. Michael Porter Jr. hit a big three with about a minute and a half left last night. And Contavious Caldwell-Pope, KCP doesn't get enough credit for what he did defensively, but what he's done for this team over the last two seasons just to keep them rolling and kind of being that glue guy, but just doing all the dirty work as well.
KCP with the dunk. That got the building going. That was awesome. Can I ask for a double when Rui Hachimura is covering the big fella? Just a double there? I mean, how many easy trips did they give him in the third? Double!
You have to. I mean, and that's where you pick. I mean, you're gonna let Hachimura just – I mean, and honestly, if I'm the Lakers, I don't want him – Jokic playing one-on-one against any of my guys in the post, because if it is Anthony Davis, as good as he is defensively, you don't want him to be in a position to pick up fouls. And so if it's Hachimura, who hasn't played very well this series so far in these two games, if it's him, I feel like you got to get the ball out of his hands. But then hopefully you want Aaron Gordon to be the one catching that ball on the perimeter, hopefully in the corner and shooting that three. And he's who knows what's going to happen when he's shooting that three-pointer. But you've got to take the ball out of Jokic's hands. But it's hard to do, and they've been trying to do it now for years. And the Lakers lost 10 in a row, and they haven't figured it out. And so it might be just a matter of just the better team, the better role players, but obviously just the confidence for this group of Nuggets.
How much can you tell from body language? Because I thought when they were down 20 and they just stayed in their rhythm, they didn't panic, they didn't speed up, they just kept doing what they were doing. That's when I said, okay, they're coming back. How much can you tell from that?
I mean, that tells it all to me. I mean, and Adam, you've seen it before. I mean, with these guys, I think a lot of it was resemblance to what happened last year in the playoffs, right? I mean, the Lakers had moments last year against the Nuggets where they had some big leads and they go on big runs. But the Nuggets, they're so poised. They're a veteran group, and I think they get a lot of that, obviously, from the success they've had and continuity. But Mike Malone instills a lot of that in them. And he's just kind of got that attitude where no matter what, we're going to keep fighting, and kind of that hard hat mentality. And I think they believe that. And that permeates through just not their team and their locker room, but that building. And when they got going last night, it was hard to stop that thing. But I think the Lakers, the body language says it all. And to me, the thing that really spells trouble is the post-game press conference in terms of when LeBron's blaming them losing that lead on the foul in the third quarter with like 10 seconds left. That does get called and gets reversed against for D'Angelo Russell. And then Anthony Davis just kind of walking off and not describing what happened in that last play. I think that's just kind of a loser's mentality and kind of that front-running will. You've got to step up there and answer those questions and even just be professional and be political about it. But that just that rubs me the wrong way, and I think that's not how you handle it, especially when you were up by so much and it's not a heartbreak game like the Sixers went through against the Knicks.
Again, we're talking to Curtis Terry, the color commentating voice for the UNLV Running Rebels. Curtis, when it comes to another series, let's keep it in L.A., the Mavericks and the Clippers. The Clippers were able to get that win in game one without Kawhi Leonard. If Kawhi comes back tonight, do you think this is the end of the series for the Mavericks if they can't get the win to match it 1-1?
No, I think the Mavericks are due for this one tonight. And obviously, James Harden, and see, we talked about this back in the fall, and I think the Sixers are missing some James Harden right now, for sure. But I think what James Harden was able to do offensively, I think they're a different team, obviously, without Kawhi Leonard, and they don't have as many threats. I think the ball probably moves a little bit better, just not having that third superstar on the floor for the Clippers. But I like the Mavericks. I think with Luka, with Kyrie, and then with their role players knowing exactly what they need to do, and there's no question about it, the Mavericks played really good basketball, especially late in that game. I think the Mavericks are going to win this game. I think they can win the series, but I think the Clippers are in a position where if they need Kawhi back if he's healthy, just to be able to put the Mavericks in enough pressure situations defensively where they can't cover all three of those guys plus Russell Westbrook.
CT is with us, Curtis Terry and Cofield and Company. How do you feel about Phoenix in the miniseries? That game's coming up here in about 40 minutes.
And I don't know, man. I'm going for the Phoenix Suns because obviously Isaiah Thomas has got some relation there, so I'm cheering for IT and his sons, and hopefully they can pull this one out. It just didn't look good on Saturday for the Suns, and obviously and Anthony Edwards, what he did was just phenomenal in the way he's playing. Obviously, should be in the MVP contention, and like he says, and is exclaiming, he's going to be the best player in the league in 2 to 3 years. I strongly believe that. But the Suns got to figure something out. They've got to be able to get Devin Booker going. I think Kevin Durant's got to go back to older Kevin Durant and just start putting up everything and controlling the game. And if other guys get along, they can. Otherwise, they're going to be out here early. But it's surprising for them, especially a team that won all the games in the regular season against the Timberwolves, for them to have that much trouble. But hopefully they can turn it around. But that's one of those things where I think it's probably going to go 7 because I think teams are going to win on their own home floor. Unless someone's going to be able to steal one on the road.
Breaking down the NBA playoffs. Another game tonight, Indiana-Milwaukee. Milwaukee came out, played well without Giannis. He's not playing again tonight. Indiana dominated the series during the regular season. In a way, are the Bucks actually better in terms of matchup with the Pacers without Giannis?
Yeah, and Steve, we talked about this before with UNLV, but with all the other basketball teams as well. Like, when your star guys are out, it's harder for a team to prepare for you because they don't know how you're going to attack. Obviously, when Giannis is in the game, you know he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. It's going to be a pick and roll with him and Dame on the wing or on the top. But when it's Dame Lillard out there and just everybody else in Middleton and Lopez, it's not as predictable as what they're going to do. And I think they showed that in a situation where Damian Lillard can take over a game, and he did that. Obviously, that first half was amazing. Didn't produce anything in the second half. But I think that this comes down to experience. I think this group of Bucks are experienced enough, and as much as flack as Doc Rivers has taken since he took over the Bucks during the course of the season, I think they're going to have enough experience to be able to win this series. And I just don't think Indiana's ready. As good as they played, as good as Rick Carlisle is, and the championship coaches that he has been, I just don't think them collectively as a team are ready yet to take this step. You've got to have those struggles and those pains to be able to advance to the playoffs. And I think they had a good season, but I don't think this is going to be the time yet for the Indiana Pacers.
Curtis, all right, you tweeted, hey, got some things to say before you came on the show. Let's move over to UNLV. Do you think that missing out on Josh Jefferson is a blow to UNLV when it comes to the transfer portal?
Yes and no. Let me clarify that. That was totally directed to Steve about his bet trying to go with the Lakers.
Okay.
And LeBron James. So we already aired that. We aired that concern. We voiced that. But no, I think that was a guy that you thought you were going to be able to get with his connection to Las Vegas, being a Henderson kid and going to Liberty High School and playing with DJ Thomas. Being able to get him back home, I think, would have worked well for this team and for this group. But then when you step back and you kind of let it process and you look at their roster, I think the announcement yesterday, when Jalen Hill's medical waiver gets granted and knowing that he's going to be back for sure, I think that kind of calms some of those concerns. And now, like we talked about last week, it's about them just getting more length and shooting and athleticism. So Josh Jefferson fits that mold to a degree, but it's more inside focused in terms of his length and athleticism. I think you need a guy that can run the floor or a guy that can knock down some shots and be a wing, be a slasher. Kind of like Keelan Boone, like Donovan Williams, like they've had the last couple of years in the portal. But I think it's a blow, but I think you being able to get Jalen Hill back is going to concern or calm a lot of people's concerns, because he was coming into this past season, the guy that was projected to be the best player and the guy that can do it all. And so I think them getting him cleared, first of all, from that waiver standpoint, now getting him back physically in terms of his health will be a big step for the Rebels to move forward and take some of that pressure off in terms of inside and what they're going to have to do on the inside.
Curtis Terry's with us. We were just talking about Joshua Jefferson, local kid, went to St. Mary's, and then UNLV made an effort. I don't know how strong the effort was, and I'm not questioning if they tried hard, but the kid then went to visit, TCU, Virginia, and Iowa State, maybe canceled the VCU, but, you know, some other big boys came in on him. So there's a vibe online today that's a bit disappointed. You tell me, how much can the Thomases be involved in this whole team building thing? And I wonder, they must have known they weren't getting Jefferson. You don't think they, you know, at 10 o'clock today, they're like, what the hell's going on? You didn't get Josh Jefferson? We're mad.
Yeah. I think this is kind of what to Deion Sanders, Coach Sanders over at Buffalo was saying the other day, when in terms of the players are the ones that are recruiting these kids. And I don't think that's any more true now. Obviously the money aspect's gonna come into it with NIL. But these players all have played with each other or against each other for years coming up through the grassroots. And I think these players are the ones that are able to recruit these kids and get them to commit and tell them the real and keep it 100 with them in terms of how it is, how coaches, what life is like on campus, off campus, the freedom that they have, the flexibility, the things that they can do around town. And so I think the players are the ones that ultimately sell this program and still are the ones that host these guys when they come in on those visits. But I wouldn't be surprised with Deion Thomas Jr. Having played with Josh Jefferson, obviously with his dad having coached him to some degree, I'm sure that they're trying to do their part to make sure they can get the right kids in there for this team to be successful. But I know that Coach Kevin Kruger and staff are doing the right things, but I also know that Coach Kevin Kruger is not a knee-jerk reaction guy. He's a guy that's very calm and collected. He's going to think things through, and even if they do miss out on somebody that they probably maybe wanted or was high on their list, maybe or maybe not, that they still got a plan in place and kind of got those contingency plans of who to go after. And I think that Jalen Hill news yesterday lessened that blow of not getting him. But I don't think the Thomases woke up this morning like, oh, my God, we didn't get Josh back. I'm sure that they had a feeling that was coming.
Curtis, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll see you, buddy.
Yes, sir. Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Yeah, let's hope for UNLV fans there's not another salt in the wound moment. So now Otts has Keyshawn Gilbert, Joshua Jefferson, and I don't know, man. Behind the scenes, I'm still thinking that Zion Collins is going to end up with Otts.